the Nightcap here on VSiN, the third and final hour, but we're still rocking it as we always are. Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst, will join us in 5 minutes, get his thoughts on tomorrow, and some also futures thoughts as well. Let's get to the Suns and Lakers, the lone game still alive on the board, and under 3 minutes to go in the third quarter. Suns leading 80-79. Someone on this set took an in-play on the Los Angeles Lakers. What do you got?
And it wasn't you?
It was not me. It was not me.
I took the Lakers plus 3.5. I just thought, you know, LeBron seems, he seems like he's in full LeBron mode tonight. And they've played good D all game. Look, the Suns have hit a lot of threes, but I think it's going to be the Lakers down the stretch here. And I got plus 3.5.
And the reason you did that was because Devin Booker got ejected.
Devin Booker,
he gone. Midway through the third quarter, ejected from the game. He had 17 points and 6 assists. And
that was midway through the third. He was playing good. He was on pace for probably 25-plus and 10 assists.
There was a chance he went off, and it's funny, we talked about this pretty extensively to start the show. Looking at Devin Booker and LeBron, both were sitting there at 27.5 points today. Now, LeBron was juiced to the over. Booker was juiced to the under. But Devin Booker, plus 105 to lead all scorers tonight, and I felt like that was a decent play, and didn't know Devin Booker would get ejected from the game.
This game's been really chippy. Both teams complaining to the officials constantly. Frank Vogel got teed up for arguing with the officials. So it's been one of those nights for the officials here tonight.
And Chris Paul, over-under on assists was 9.5. Juice to the under at minus 129. He's got 9 assists right now. So you'd feel probably pretty comfortable where you stand if you took the over on Chris Paul assists. Just 4 points, but 9 assists. 82-78, 2.5 minutes to go in the third quarter with the Suns and Lakers down the stretch. And now I've got a rooting interest because you've got Lakers plus 3.5.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. Another 3 for Phoenix. Boy, are they drilling them tonight.
85-78 for the Phoenix Suns over the Los Angeles Lakers. We'll get into the Milwaukee Bucks with JVT here, because
bad Bucks.
Nobody can just figure this team out. They get red hot. They win 5 in a row. They beat the Clippers on Sunday, scored the final 9 points in regulation. And then you look at Denver without Gary Harris, Paul Millsap, and JaMychal Green today. No problem. Denver will have a 37-11-10 performance from Nikola Jokic, and he'll have his, 50th career triple-double.
Yeah.
37 points for Jokic, 24 points from Jamal Murray, and they run away with things. They dominate the second half, led by 14 at the break, so you kind of just shrug your shoulders. I know a lot of people were wondering, what's up with this Nuggets team right now? Are they tired after they went to the Western Conference Finals last year? And now the Bucks, they fall back into, I thought they were back in the top three. Are they not in the top three of the Eastern Conference anymore? So, yeah, it was a interesting result tonight in Milwaukee. By the way, in Milwaukee, 8-point underdog, won by 31.
They were never in it.
No.
They were never within 10 after it was 31-21.
Boston Celtics tonight, 117-112 winner over the Los Angeles Clippers. Home dog in the Celtics. They take care of business. Paul George has 32. Kawhi Leonard did not play, but the Clippers still won off as 4.5-point favorites. Kemba Walker hit 6 three-pointers in this game. He led the Celtics with 25 points. Jaylen Brown had 18. Off the bench, Peyton Pritchard, easy for me to say, had 14. And also Jason Tatum had 14.
What we didn't hit on was the Miami Heat without Jimmy Butler managed to score just 80 points at home tonight.
Lose to the Atlanta Hawks, 94-80. Outscored in the fourth quarter, 31-14.
Yikes.
Led going into the fourth quarter, outscored by 17. They fall tonight 94-80 to the Miami Heat. Much more NBA talk. Get you updated on what's happening in Los Angeles as well. JVT up next. Stick around. A It's the Nightcap here on VSiN. Matt Holt, Tim Murray with you at Matthew Holt USI on Twitter at 1TimMurray is where you can find me. 1 minute to go, third quarter. Suns up on the Lakers, 86-81. Late steam coming in on the Suns to get them as a 2-point favorite in this one. And the total went off at 215. So 86-81 closing out this third quarter in Los Angeles and closing out the night in what has been an eventful night, both in college basketball, which we will get to later on in the hour, including in Treats and Beats, because, yeah, I haven't forgotten about what happened in Morgantown, West Virginia. So we'll save that for Treats and Beats here. But an eventful night nonetheless in the NBA. And let's bring in our senior NBA analyst, that is Jonathan Von Tobel, JVT, at MeJVT on Twitter is where you can find him. JVT, I want to start with the result we saw in Milwaukee. They won five straight, all by double digits. They lose by five straight, all by double digits. Then they win five straight in a row, not all by double digits, but some impressive wins in there, including Sunday over the Clippers. And then tonight, they just come out, the Bucks, and get absolutely throttled against a shorthanded Denver Nuggets team. What do we make of this Milwaukee Bucks team right now?
I don't know if you really change your opinion too much, right? I think this is the ebbs and flows of an NBA season. We've seen a lot of weird and quizzical results throughout the year, right? We can go back to the beginning of the season where the Los Angeles Clippers got blown out. I think it was like 75-30, right? At halftime, whatever it was of that game on a Sunday against the Dallas Mavericks.
Yeah.
And go on from there. So it seems like just one of those games where the Denver Nuggets came out. They were playing well. They couldn't get stopped at the rim. I think they were like 22-27 within 4 feet of the basket with like four or five fouls drawn on those shooting attempts. So it was just a really hot shooting night for Denver. They kind of, you know, cooled down a little bit in the fourth quarter. It looked like a couple of times Milwaukee might start to climb back in a little bit and make it interesting, but ultimately they just kind of held at arm's length. I would say really, for the most part, as we watch these teams and as these results come in, you know, you're going to get this from a night-to-night basis, especially coming off of a really big win, as you mentioned, over the Los Angeles Clippers. That was the last time we saw them, so it's not really shocking to see them lose like this. And they were a pretty big favorite, but a big favorite for a relatively good reason. You mentioned a shorthanded nature. I think we just kind of chalked this up to another night in the NBA, you know?
After an amazing rookie campaign, I think there was a little bit of expectations around a Memphis Grizzlies squad with Ja Morant and how great he was playing. This is a team that certainly struggled early in the year, but suddenly they've won 3 out of 4, including a 28-point blowout of the Clippers, a 49-point blowout of the Houston Rockets, and a 14-point road win tonight at the Washington Wizards, in which Ja Morant went for 35 points, 10 assists. Is this Memphis team, you know, a legit team to maybe get in the top six in the West all of a sudden?
You know, I don't know about top six, Matt, but they're definitely going to be like in the play-in contention. You know, my problem with Memphis is like defensively, they're really solid. You know, they use the same philosophy as the Milwaukee Bucks use, emphasis on rim protection, not so much along the perimeter. It has allowed them to place within the top half of the league in terms of defensive efficiency last year. Now this year, well inside the top 10. But my problem is it's a team, you know, that is really relying offensively on the mid-range game. You know, you mentioned them blowing out the Los Angeles Clippers, and they did. And they shot 50% from mid-range. They took 44 attempts from that area of the floor. But when those shots aren't falling, the result gets kind of ugly. And the case in point is the next day, where then they got blown out by the Los Angeles Clippers because those mid-range shots weren't falling. So I think this is, look, it's a good, young, competitive team. They're starting to get healthy. Remember, the first whole half of this year, they pretty much weren't at full strength. Jaren Jackson Jr., Justice Winslow, right? Those guys weren't on the floor. We see Justice Winslow finally back. So this is a team that is going to start to eventually get whole again as well. So I would say they're definitely better than what we saw in the first half of the year. You know, six, just given the crowded nature of the Western Conference, seems like a really high bar. But again, they're not really that far out, so crazier things have happened. But to me, ultimately, what gives me pause about them in the long term is the way that they play offense. And when you're, you know, exploiting such an inefficient area of the floor, you're going to have some extreme results in that two-game series with the Clippers. Is, I think, a really good example of what this Memphis team is.
We're talking to Jonathan Von Tobel, our senior NBA analyst. Also, the podcast is up and going. Hardwood Handicappers. Make sure to check that out. All right, JVT, let's get into it. James Harden for MVP. That is right now what it says on your Twitter. I'll let you have the floor is yours. James Harden for MVP.
Well, I think it's, look, it's, I shouldn't say simple case, but he has a very strong resume. I think his resume is just as strong as any of the six guys that we're going to talk about to win this award. We're talking about a guy who, if you want to look at some of the deeper metrics, right, top five in terms of offensive real plus minus, top five in terms of real plus minus wins shared. If you want to look at the basic metrics, top 15 scoring wise, he's the league leader in assists at this point right now. Since he has come over to the Brooklyn Nets, they were 7-6 when they got him. They are 16-7 with him in the fold. You know, he's just been a really solid player for them. He's going to be on the floor almost every single game. He has been, I don't think there's any arguing that he's been Brooklyn's most important player, considering that Kevin Durant has only played in 10 games since he's been there. Kyrie Irving has been in and out of the lineup a little less consistently, but still, he has been the mainstay for this team, and he had his MVP moment, I guess, if you want to call it, against the Phoenix Suns. But just in reality, Tim, if you look at what he has done for Brooklyn and what he could potentially do going forward, if we're talking about him maintaining his course in terms of statistically, and they end up, let's say, surpassing Philadelphia, taking the number one overall seed, fight for potentially the best record in the NBA, why not him to be one of the top five guys to potentially win the MVP? So I think he's got just as good a case as any of them. And if we're talking like 33-1, you know, those are odds I think that are worth investing in, because statistically, anecdotally, he's got almost everything that you want for an MVP candidate.
But I think ultimately what it comes down to is humans vote on this. And you're going to hear, and look, you know, the folks that vote on it, like the Zach Lowe's of the world, are very analytical, but they're going to look at those games. And I know you'll have a rebut for it, but they'll look at the 8 games that he played in Houston where the numbers weren't bad, but he was dogging it. He looked fat. He was out of shape. And he wanted out, and the team was calling him out. They didn't want him there. And I just think back to the year that James Harden won the MVP in 2017, 2018. He carried the Houston Rockets, and LeBron James was knocked for the month of January. He played every game that year, but kind of dogged it, played no defense. The numbers weren't great, and then turned it back on. And that was the differentiator between Harden and LeBron that year. I think regardless of the numbers, those 8 games and the optics that took place in Houston are going to be held very much against James Harden, unless he just goes nuclear here and the Brooklyn Nets, you know, don't lose another game.
Well, I would say that nuclear is a 30-point triple-double in which he doesn't turn the ball over and he leads him to a win in overtime like he did the other night, right? Like, he was incredible in that game. He only had 10 points going into the fourth quarter. But, Tim, like, my rebuttal to that stretch in Houston would be, yeah, sure, like, he didn't look great, but I'd have a two-part rebuttal. One is, I don't know when the MVP became a moral award, right? It's most valuable player. I don't think we judge guys in terms of how they act, you know, on and off the court. And the other part is, if he was dogging it, he had 3 30-point games and a 40-point game in which he dropped 17 assists while he was in Houston. So, like, there were times where he looked awful and he didn't want to be there. That's all very valid. But in terms of being the most valuable player, he had some fantastic games with Houston. And again, if you're the best team in the Eastern Conference, potentially in the NBA, and he's got the numbers that he has, he's got a really realistic shot. So you're right. Like, who knows how the voters are going to handle this? There's probably going to be some really salty voters who are going to not even put him on their ballot because of that, potentially. But I think there's also going to be a lot of voters. You mentioned potentially a Zach Lowe type, but, you know, the NBA voter and the media have become really technically savvy in terms of the analytics. We're going to look past that and realize potentially how good he really is. But, you know, if you look at those games in Houston, he had some pretty poor ones. And the 2 games he played against the Lakers, you're right, John Wall came out afterwards, said, dude, buy in or get out. And he got out. But he also had some really good games for Houston. So I would think that overall, you know, we're talking about this now in March. By the time we get to the end of the season, and those are the first 5, you know, the first 8 games of the year, and again, 3 of which he scored over 30 points. So really talking about a 5-game sample size. Like, I think that is easily forgotten, especially when you look at some of the other MVPs, right? You know, LeBron James, or I should say candidates. LeBron James is on a team in which they go 1-5 over a stretch of 6 games. He clearly gets irritated and pissed off, especially in the Washington Wizards game where he chucks up a shot from the logo because he just wants to go home, right? Philadelphia has a lot of weird losses at full strength. They just lose to the Cavs the other day in overtime. They have back-to-back losses to the Portland Trailblazers who are shorthanded. You know, we can go through those losses as well. So I just think at the end of the day, again, when we're just talking about investing at prices and looking at the realistic chances of a guy winning MVP, you know, we're talking about a guy at 33-1. His odds should be shorter than that, given what his resume is, at least the way I handicap it. So I think that is worth an investment.
I don't disagree, though. Those odds, if you could find 33-1 in the way he's playing, I think it's worth a shot. But I think at the end of the day, and yeah, we're talking about very short prices on LeBron and Joel Embiid. But at the end of the day, I think those days in Houston are going to be held against him, right or wrong, and that's why I don't think he'll win. But absolutely worth taking a shot on it. Let's stick with the MVP though. PointsBet now has this as co-favorites, Joel Embiid and LeBron James. Do you agree with that? Do you think it is that close when it comes to the MVP between Embiid and LeBron right now?
Oh yeah, like 100%. Look, the 6-game stretch is really going to hurt LeBron, mm-hmm. and especially when I mentioned it wasn't just the Wizards game. You know, he looked like first year LeBron there, at least first year LeBron, I should say, with the Lakers, right? You know, he's clearly pouting. He's wearing his emotion on his sleeve. You know, I mentioned the Wizards game where he chucks up that shot. There was a possession or two earlier where Russell Westbrook catches a ball at the elbow and he doesn't even try to help on defense. He just lets him score. You know, that 6-game stretch looked pretty ugly, and that's obviously fresh in our minds. So that's going to be something that I think, you know, brings him down in terms of, you know, the pecking order and the potential to win this award. But I am really curious, you know, everybody has different criteria, you know, for this award. And I kind of alluded to that with Joel Embiid. You know, this is a team that has taken some losses that I would consider unacceptable when you're at full strength. And I wonder how much that hurts Joel Embiid and the Philadelphia 76ers and what the criteria is, right? Personally, I don't really think it should. Like, you look at the Cavaliers game, he was absolutely incredible in that game, but they lost. And if you take in as much media as I do around the NBA, you know, you listen to some guys who have votes and some women who have votes, and they say that, hey, you know, wins and losses matter, especially to lesser and inferior competition. And if they continue to take some weird losses like this, the Philadelphia 76ers, that is, how much does that, you know, hold into the factor of Joel Embiid's candidacy? But I would say for right now, your top two candidates, 100% without a doubt, should be Joel Embiid, should be LeBron James, and then you have everybody else in the workings, whether it's Nikola Jokic, James Harden, Steph Curry, who I think has a dynamite resume to potentially win MVP as well. You know, any one of these. But Tim, I'm just most excited because if you were to tell me right now any one of these six guys is winning this award, I would just shrug and be like, okay, like I totally get it. So I'm really excited to see what's going to happen as the time, you know, by the time we get to the end of the season.
You know, turning our attention away from bets that could cash in 4 months, instead looking at bets that could cash tomorrow, we have two 19-win teams playing each other in basically a pick 'em contest tomorrow. Golden State at Portland. Draymond Green is probable with that gimpy ankle. What do you think of Golden State at Portland tomorrow as we head into the NBA All-Star break?
You know, I really like this Golden State team from a couple of perspectives, Matt, especially defensively, right? They've played extremely well this year, top 10 team in terms of efficiency. But we have seen at times, we saw it in that Lakers game as well, that their offense just is not really efficient, right? The last look, and I haven't checked for a couple of days, 21st in overall offensive efficiency. Steph Curry off the floor, the net rating plummets, and it's a big negative. And so that is what also has ultimately held them back in a lot of these spots. The key here, though, is Portland, from a defensive standpoint, it's just not really been good. We're talking about a defensive rating of about 119 over the last few games. You saw the other night, look, Charlotte was going back and forth with them, but Charlotte also looked like a team that came back and outscored their opponent 12-3 the night before, got burned out, and Carmelo Anthony just started raining threes from everywhere in the fourth quarter. But I still think this Portland team is relatively vulnerable. I am not surprised by the number. I don't know if Golden State should be favored. So I want to sit back and wait. If I can get like a small little plus price here with Golden State on the money line, it'd be something I would look at here in this spot.
Yeah, and the total is going to be high, 235.5 with Golden State and Portland tomorrow. Talking to JVT, our senior NBA analyst. Check out his podcast, Hardwood Handicappers. Utah and Philadelphia tomorrow. You know, are we getting to the spot? And I'm not trying to overreact after just, you know, one performance that we saw last night with them losing at New Orleans. But is this the spot where we now look that they're maybe a little bit overpriced? Early line, and DraftKings is the only one that has it at this point in time, has Utah laying points in Philadelphia. Is this a spot to grab some points with a pretty talented team at home?
You know, I'm not sure, right? Because if we look at it from a statistical standpoint, Tim, one of the shocking weaknesses that has popped up in the resume of Philadelphia is that they're 19th in opponent three-point shooting. They're actually giving up just under 38% from beyond the arc. That's not something you really want from a Jazz team, that a quarter of their three-point looks are considered wide open, right, close to defender, 6 feet away or farther, and a team that moves the ball extremely well. And I would just take you back a couple of weeks ago. you know, remember, they were playing host to Philadelphia before Joel Embiid was ruled out, and they were laying 7.5 at home in that spot. We've had all these conversations about home court, how little it means at this point right now. So when I see a number of Utah minus 2.5, you know, it tells me that the market has kind of taken a step back here on the power rating. They were laying 7.5 2 weeks ago against this team at home with, you know, potentially still with Joel Embiid. Then when he got ruled out, got up to at least as high as 9. So I would sit back, and my initial thought is to actually look at Utah in this spot. Philadelphia, for everything we like about them, I think they have some issues on defense that Utah can exploit.
You know, playing the over in New Orleans Pelicans games has been as good as gold lately. They've scored at least over 230 points or more in 11 of their last 12 games. But those totals are starting to get really high. And what we're seeing tomorrow is a total of 237 as New Orleans hosts Chicago. Is the value starting to disappear in the overs in New Orleans as the market continues to adjust?
I mean, it could, but yesterday, you know, the other day I took under 236 with the Jazz and the Pelicans game, man. You know, I was out. I was dead, like, early on. So, like, you know, I look at this and I think potentially, but you can ram your head into the wall being smart a bunch, and you can lose a lot of money doing that, you know?
There's no doubt about it. JVT, you are the best. We appreciate it. And James Harden's not going to win MVP.
I'll bet you he will. See you later. See you later.
There he is. Jonathan Von Tobel at MeJVT on Twitter. What happened in Morgantown, West Virginia, and why was I so angry? We'll discuss that next right here on the Nightcap. Minutes to go in the fourth quarter. The Phoenix Suns, a 101-93 lead. They're keeping the lead despite Devin Booker being ejected from the game midway through the third quarter. That's Matt Holt. I'm Tim Murray. We'll turn the page to tomorrow in our next segment and take a look at another big day with an early start time in a game that both Matt and I like. 8 a.m. local time. Gonna have to fire tonight or very early in the morning, depending on where you are. But let's get to some treats and beats. And I'll start with the beats. Baylor and West Virginia. Last night on the show, took a look at this line. Said we like West Virginia. Plus the 4.5. I was driving home. Got on the phone. Matt Eumanns and I chatting about it. Guess what? We're both in agreement. We like the points with West Virginia. This wasn't a spot where the line rushed down. It went off at 4. But still, it seemed like West Virginia was in a good spot. Game gets out to a Baylor start. They're getting hot. But at the end of the day, second half is really dominated. It was 40-35 early second half, 18 minutes to go. That's when West Virginia last was not in the number. Baylor led by 5, 40-35, 18 minutes to go. And from then until 18 seconds left, in overtime, so 22 minutes and 42 seconds of gameplay, Baylor was not within the number. West Virginia was covering, leading for a good chunk of that, led 81-79. Miles McBride missed one free throw. That allowed Jared Butler to go down, make a layup, force overtime, and then going back and forth in overtime, it was 92-89, two free throws. Of course they were made, because that's just the way it was going, to make it 94-89 with 18 seconds to go. And West Virginia had one and then another opportunity to get into that well-deserved backdoor. Did not happen. So that was the bad beat for me personally. But if anyone else out there had West Virginia plus the 2, at the end of the first half, this one might have even been worse, Matt. 32-31, Baylor is leading West Virginia. They're called for a charge with 1.4 seconds to go. You can only run the baseline after a made shot. Now, West Virginia called timeout. So there might have just been a mistake, forgot the situation, and the West Virginia player started to run the baseline. Can't do that. It's a travel. So now Baylor gets the ball underneath their own basket. Of course, you know what's going to happen. Bang. Three at the buzzer. There goes your first half cover. Baylor gets the cover in the first half and gets the cover in the game because overtime, as always, is where underdogs go to die.
Yeah, crazy. And I'll tell you one, you know, and we saw plenty of crazy games. I think a treat is if you had Cleveland State either to win the Horizon League or just to win this game tonight, then you ended up with a heck of a beat as I'm going to mess his name up. Let's just say the Cleveland State player, they're down three with 5 seconds to go, and Cleveland State player who hit the three to tie the game to send it to triple overtime is first and only made three of the season. He banks it home. They end up winning in triple overtime, and suddenly Cleveland State, with Wright State blowing a 24-point lead with 6 minutes to go and losing to Wisconsin-Milwaukee, Cleveland State now the favorite to win the Horizon League tournament.
Well, and let's get to that game here, because we mentioned the Horizon League. It was almost absolute carnage.
Oh,
Cleveland
gosh.
State salvaged that by getting the win. Did not cover. Dogs went 3-1 ATS, 2-2 straight up tonight. Detroit, who is the second favorite, lost outright to Northern Kentucky, 70-69. But the big one was Wright State. This was the favorite in the conference.
Overwhelming favorite.
You know, odds on.
A minus money favorite.
Odds on favorite. It was 72-48. Wright State was leading Milwaukee, who was the eighth seed in this conference. And they blew that lead. It goes to overtime, and the Milwaukee Panthers come out with a stunning victory as a 13-point underdog. They beat Wright State. Unbelievable. And the, you know, the win probabilities out there?
100.
100. 100%.
I guess it was not exactly 100.
Yeah. So, wow. Wright State blows a 24-point lead with 6.5 minutes to go to the 8th seed in the Horizon League tournament. We turn the page and take a look at tomorrow, including a game that will start at 8 a.m. local time. It's one that you like. Stick around. It's the Nightcap on VSiN. Here at VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, we're on top of all the sports on today's schedule, as well as the future impacts of NFL trades, free agency, and draft choices to help you become a sharper better for every game on the NBA, on the board. Not just the NBA board, on any board out there. We're not about picks and predictions. We give you the analysis and insights you need to become a smarter better on every sport. We have the best handicappers in the biz, giving you the tools you need to create your own betting edge. And right now, for only $50, you can put our experts to work for you all the way through the College Hoops Final. You get everything we offer, including our members-only daily best bet emails, point spread weekly guides with up-to-date power rankings, the upcoming bracket guide, bracket betting guide, and of course, all access to VSiN.com. Sign up today to get everything we offer through the end of the College Hoops tournament for $50 at VSiN.com/ subscribe. It is the Nightcap here on VSiN. Tim Murray and Matt Holt with you, and the action starts early and often tomorrow. The Atlantic 10 tournament, it'll be the opening round. Your VCUs, your St. Bonaventures, your Richmonds, they're not playing tomorrow. But you and I see an intriguing one. 701-702, that is the rotation number. St. Joseph's at LaSalle. Now, on the surface, you might not think much about this, and, well, you still might not think much about this game. But the way that St. Joe's has played down the stretch is why you and I laid the two with St. Joe's. St. Joe's, for the majority of their season, has been missing their best player, Ryan Daly.
Yep.
He is now back, and their last three games included an overtime win against LaSalle, who they're playing tomorrow, a 13-point win over Dayton, and a 3-point win on the road against Richmond. Now, St. Joe's played that game on Monday. They did not go back to Philadelphia. They stayed down in Richmond. So, yes, quick turnaround, but still, I like St. Joe's in this spot. I laid the two. You know, I'll probably lay the money line early in the morning, too, on St. Joe's. I like this spot for St. Joe's. I like the way that they've been playing. You know, think back early on in the year. They opened the season with an overtime loss against Auburn. You know, this is a team that seemed to be pesky a little bit early on. Really challenging preseason schedule. And then Ryan Daly gets lost for the year. They only win one game up until February 20th. So I'm laying the two with St. Joe's tomorrow against LaSalle.
And I'm with you. I love Ryan Daly. This is a guy, almost 20 points a game, 19.5 points, 6.9 rebounds a game, 3 assists per game, shoots 45% from the field, a senior who's going to want to go out with a bang. And look, when these two teams played, you talked about the double overtime win that they had against LaSalle on February 20th. He had 30 points in that game. He had 25 points in the 13-point road win at Dayton. I like these kind of players in this spot. One of the best players in the conference, a senior. This is it for him. Going to want to go out with a bang here. And I think he's going to come with a big-time performance. And this is a team that has won three straight down the stretch against the team who's lost 6-7 in LaSalle. You know, give me, I'll lay the two with St. Joe's tomorrow.
Yeah, and then the other game in the A-10 tournament, Fordham at GW. It's a pass for me. I'm not laying that many points with GW, but you can't. I can't take points with Fordham. I can't do it.
I don't even know that that line's long enough. I look at that line as bad as Fordham is.
It opened 4.5 here at Circa. It is now bet up to 7.
And I feel like that's a better than at 4.5. I would have laid it too. Fordham is really, really bad.
Yeah, and they fired their coach mid-season. A bunch of really big games. Let's get to a game once again. Note the start times. If you want to get in on St. Joe's in LaSalle, if you want to fade
better
us.
Better get up early.
Get up early, 8 a.m. here in Vegas, 11 a.m. on the East Coast. But still, to some, if you're watching this show, it might be pretty early for you. So that is an early start time there, St. Joe's and LaSalle. That's a neutral site game. That game will be played at the Siegel Center at the, I think that's VCU's arena. Clemson-Syracuse. Syracuse. Earlier this week, this was a spot I liked Syracuse in to beat UNC, and they able to hold on. They won that as a short home dog. Now they're laying two. Is this a spot to fade Syracuse? You see Clemson coming in, a 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern start. Clemson getting two on the road at Syracuse.
It'll definitely be a fade Syracuse spot for me. I already played the Clemson Tigers -2 here in the overnights. I love this Clemson team. They've only lost once since January 27th. They're on a current 5-game win streak, which includes a 17-point win over this same Syracuse team, a 13-point win over North Carolina where they held them to 50 points, a 60-39 win over Wake Forest. This Clemson Tigers team, you know, everyone talks about the Virginia defense and how they're the best defense in the ACC and one of the best defensive teams in the country, but we talked about it with Jim Root where the Virginia, they don't have the athleticism in the front court to play the type of defense that, you know, Virginia fans are used to. I think Clemson might be the best defense in the ACC. I love the way they clamp down on teams. I love the way they're playing. And I lay two tomorrow in Northern New York.
So that game at 2 o'clock Eastern, 2 o'clock Pacific, 5 o'clock Eastern tip. UConn at Seton Hall. My UConn Huskies. Who was it? John Rothstein saying something earlier this week about, hey, people better watch out for UConn. I said, look, but ask my partner. Yeah, I've been talking about UConn for weeks. And this is a flip of favorites. This game, the opener here at Circa was Seton Hall -1.5, and it's now UConn -1.5 on the road at Seton Hall. I'm not a big fan of laying points on the road, but I really like where this UConn team's at. If you look at KenPom, they're projected to lose, but I feel like UConn right now is playing its best basketball. They're going to continue trending in the right direction. I do like that UConn tomorrow. I'll probably end up grabbing this money line when those pop early in the morning. But under two, I would look at UConn as a potential play on here against Seton Hall. It is on the road.
Game for Seton Hall.
Yeah, and Seton Hall's dropped two in a row. They've had a week off to lick their wounds. Last two games, lost to Georgetown and Butler. So, you know, I don't love the spot for UConn here at Seton Hall. The desperation.
Back against the wall, must win.
And the two games they lost recently, you know, the more I think about it, I might end up staying away, actually, from UConn here in the spot. Really like UConn. It's an important game for both teams because UConn is not securely in. They're still in a hairy spot, at, you know, 10 or 11 seed. But big bubble game tomorrow and a huge Big East game in Philadelphia tomorrow. The two top teams in the Big East. The rematch, a team coming off an ugly loss. Who do we like in that one? We'll discuss next right here on the Nightcap on VSiN. Wrapping things up here on the Nightcap, it is Tim Murray, Matt Holt with you, and before we jump back into the Wednesday slate of college basketball, one final to let you know, the Phoenix Suns have defeated the Los Angeles Lakers. The steam was correct.
Yeah.
The late steam. The Suns cover the two, and the over hits went off at 215 here at Circa. It ends up at 218, 114 to 104, the final score. The Phoenix Suns, after an 8-8 start to the season, have now won 15 of their last 18. In their last two losses, they had leads by 24 and 17 in their last two losses. So the Phoenix Suns hot right now. They win despite Devin Booker getting ejected in the third quarter.
Yeah, they outscored the Lakers by 9 points after he got ejected.
Yep. So good win for the Suns. Lakers continue to kind of meander without Anthony Davis. LeBron James was the game's leading scorer. Just taking a look at his prop bets. LeBron goes over his 27.5 points as he was set for 38 points, rebounds, and assists. Well, when you get 38 points, you're going to hit the over in points, rebounds, and assists as he ends up with 6 assists, 5 rebounds. That's 49 points, rebounds, assists. The over at plus 100 hits at 44.5. He did not hit his over on assists, though, as he finishes with 6 and in the game. Devin Booker, as mentioned.
And he didn't hit the double-double at minus money.
He did not. Yeah, he did not hit on that. And also, CP3, Chris Paul, does get the over plus 105 on assists. He finishes with 10 assists. It was set at 9.5. Good win for the Suns. Over hits, and the Suns get the cover. They win 114 to 104. Back to college basketball tomorrow. Yes, it's not going to be easy, so I'm going to be sweating this out to start the show. It's like 100% guarantee. Creighton at Villanova. I tweeted this out over the weekend, and I'm not going to back off of it. I love this spot for Villanova. They got hammered by Creighton 2 weeks ago in Omaha, 86-70. Great game by Creighton, actually less than 2 weeks ago. They lose by 16. Then over the weekend, they lose to Butler.
Throttled by Butler.
Really not very competitive. And now they're at home. They're facing a team that they've lost to by 16 less than 2 weeks ago, and they're laying points. I expected this would be 4. It opened 3. I grabbed the 3. It's now 4. And I love this spot for Villanova tomorrow. It's a great game. the two best teams in the Big East. I will lay the points with Villanova.
Yeah, this is a great game. I'm a little at four. I think probably the value still with Nova, but anything higher than that, Creighton's so good that I mean, the differential I think would be too wide. But it's certainly the spot heavily favors Villanova. They were certainly in the look ahead against Butler, but they completely no-showed that game. And the fact that they got whipped so badly in that game makes me think Jay Wright, he's going to have him so fired up for this game in the revenge spot because, to your point, Creighton hammered him by 16 last time these two played.
Yeah, and I would feel even better if Creighton had defeated Xavier over the weekend. So both of these teams coming off losses, big spot here for both teams, but I do like Villanova. I laid the three. It's now up to four. A potential trap spot. And, we've been talking about Maryland quite a bit. Our producer, Aaron Oster, is a Maryland alum. And when I saw this game on the schedule, after what the Terps were able to do against Michigan State in a spot that I backed the Terps on Sunday afternoon, what a win. Really impressive. And Maryland's now won five in a row. And this team is no longer, they're still technically on the bubble, but if you look at any odds, they're pretty securely in the field. I think they're on the 9 line in most spots. And now you've got a Maryland team. Wins over Minnesota, Nebraska, Nebraska, Rutgers, and Michigan State. Nothing too crazy, but the win over Michigan State's really impressive. Road win over Rutgers is solid, very solid. And now you're going to Northwestern. And the number's 4.5. That seems interestingly low, I would say. KenPom has this as a 3-point game. The public's going to come in and back Maryland here. I would just say buyer beware on Northwestern and Maryland. I think the Purple Cats are going to be live tomorrow, and I'm going to take the 4.5.
My only fear here is that Northwestern had a 13-game losing streak in conference, snapped last game, and sometimes, I mean, let's face it, their season's going nowhere.
Yep.
When you have a losing streak like that and you're fighting so hard for a win and you finally get it, oh, okay, we did it. You know, we're not going to lose that, 16 in a row to end the year. The spot isn't actually great coming off their first win in, a month and almost 2 months.
But now they're back at home.
Yeah, maybe. That was a road win.
Yeah, that was at the barn. Really one of the more strange results.
And those 13 losses in a row, most were blowouts.
But it felt like towards the end, they had the double overtime loss to Indiana. Yeah, they were in it with Purdue. They were with Illinois there. They've been playing at times better. And this was a team that early on in the year played really well and then just fell apart. Buyer beware.
Yeah, it's dog or pass. I certainly feel like it's a letdown spot for Maryland. At this point, for the first time all year, they have to feel like they're securely in.
You could take a little bit of a breath of fresh air, take a step back. You're not, you just beat Michigan State on CBS, national television. Michigan State had just beaten two top five teams in a row. And now you go to Evanston, Illinois to play Northwestern.
Yeah.
So I'm not saying Maryland will lose. I just think this one could be a little uncomfortable for Terp Nation out there, and I think the Purple Cats could be an interesting side on Wednesday night. A couple other games I know that were jumping out at you. What about Florida and Missouri tomorrow, Matt? This one opened here at Circa. 5.5 has been bet down in favor of Missouri. Now at Circa, 4.5. Other spots around town, Florida laying 4 against Mizzou.
And I had to look. Like, was there any injuries I didn't know about? Because I was really surprised to see that bets were coming in on Missouri, because I don't know that there's a more unpopular team in the betting market the last 2 weeks than Missouri. I mean, this team has been terrible. They have been a wallet bankroll buster. They have lost 4 of their last 5, with the only win coming against a really struggling South Carolina squad. And on the other side, Florida's won 3 in a row. You could say they're playing their best basketball of the season, maybe. So I was surprised to see the money come in on Missouri, but that's been the case so far. I think if this line is 4 or even 3.5, the value feels like it's on the Florida side, unless I'm missing something.
Yeah. I haven't really had a great gauge on this Florida team most of the year. They haven't been one. Missouri, I feel like, to your point, after their win against Alabama, which was just a great situational spot. Alabama was rolling, and to fade them there. But after that, they've been haven't been great. Let's roll through a couple other games. UCLA's at Oregon tomorrow. Oregon here at Circa is laying 4.5, and this opened at 3.5. So bet up quickly to 4.5. Other spots around town at 4. You gonna lay it with the Ducks at home? Are they the bet on spot here?
They seem to be everybody's favorite team right now out west, and you know, for good reason. They're playing amazing basketball. First place in the Pac-12 on the
line.
Nice
win on Monday against Arizona.
This is a huge game. I mean, the winner will have sole possession of first place in the Pac-12.
I'm starting to think this is too many points.
I am too. That's the problem. UCLA was on a 5-game win streak, playing great basketball, and then they laid an egg at Colorado. But now, I don't know that they're going to lose both of these road games in a row. And
I feel like this is a spot, once again, where everybody's going to look at Oregon.
Everybody.
They're looking at, you know, they've bounced back after the USC loss. They've won 3 straight. And what is our most recent memory of UCLA? The dud they laid at Colorado. And Colorado, look, they're a tournament team.
They are.
So that's not a horrible loss. Now, they didn't play well at all. But Oregon on Monday night, you know, they beat Arizona. That was a trendy dog, Arizona was. And now it feels like, okay, Arizona's a trendy dog. We were wrong. So now let's back Oregon. At 4.5, I would look towards the dog a little bit here.
And other than the Arizona win, which was really impressive for Oregon, so let's give them credit in that win. You know, like the 11-point win at Cal, you know, a Cal team that's terrible. A 3-point win they
without
just scraped by. Yeah, without DeSilva, they just scraped by against Stanford. Got hammered by USC. A 3-point win at home against Utah. A 4-point win at home against Colorado. A 2-point win on the road at Arizona. I feel like this team has been in a lot of 50-50 coin flip games and come out on top of them in this long streak that they're on. For me, it's Bruins or pass.
Yeah, and I'm thinking I'm going to strongly consider backing UCLA in this spot. What do we know about, speaking of Oscar De Silva, Stanford's at USC tomorrow, and this game opened 8, has stayed around there. It's actually been bet down a little bit. USC laying 7.5. This will be a game which we'll have the opportunity to preview pretty in depth because this will be a 7:30 local tip, which is always fun. So we'll get to watch this game in its entirety here. Stanford at USC with USC laying a pretty big number against the Cardinal.
Yes, USC an 8-point favorite. Open 7, up to 8. At 7.5 is the most market, but there are some 8s out there now. And I'm wondering if De Silva, who's listed as a game-time decision, I'm going to have to look into it a little bit more closely because Stanford has to have him. 19 points, 7 rebounds, 2.5 assists per game, a steal per game, over a block per game. De Silva, so important to the Stanford Cardinal. Before I bet this game, I'd have to know the information on De Silva.
And tomorrow in the NBA, remember, Brooklyn and Houston, the revenge game for James Harden, Utah at Philadelphia, and then 2 games which will be going on as we're on the air, Lakers and Kings, and also Golden State, Portland. Should be a great Wednesday night to be on the air. Join us tomorrow night. Thanks to Patrick Stevens. Thanks to Johnny Avello. Thanks to JVT, Jonathan Von Tobel. For Matt Holt, I'm Tim Murray. This has been the Nightcap right here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.